Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to the RPM subteam for Trademark Claims Data Review Call, held on Wednesday, the 22nd of May, 2019, at 1900 UTC. I'm sorry, 1700 UTC. In the interest of time, there will be no roll call. Attendance will be taken by the Zoom room. If you are only on the audio bridge, can you please let yourselves be known now? Thank you, hearing no names. I would like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking for recording purposes, and to please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I will turn it over to Julie Hedlin. Please begin.
Thank you very much, Andrea. This is Julie Hedlin from staff, and I'll just quickly run through the agenda. First item is statements of interest. Second will be a brief review of the timeline and work plan. Third is to conclude the review of individual proposal number 6 and discuss the ICANN compliance response. Four is to review proposed answers and preliminary recommendations for question 1, question 3, and if time permits, question 4. And 5 is any other business. May I ask if anyone has any other business? Seeing no hands, then I'm going to go back up to agenda item 1. Does anybody have any updates to their statements of interest? And I have Kathy. Kathy, please go ahead.
Hi, Julie, and this is Kathy, and it's an any other business request. It takes a lot longer in Zoom now to find the right buttons to unmute or raise hands. So we were so used to it in Adobe Connect and it was much more centralized. So for any other business, I would like to talk about edits and how we handle edits if we haven't talked about it in other places. Thanks.
Thank you, Kathy, and noted. Then I am not seeing any hands for updates to statements of interest. So let me turn over to Ariel Leong from ICANN staff, who will give a brief update on the work plan.
Thanks, Julie. This is Ariel Leong from staff. As you can see on the screen, we have 4 meetings left before ICANN 65 for the trademark claims subteam, and that includes today's meeting. So we are ahead of schedule, basically today's work plan is what Julie has described. The focus is to finish proposal number 6 and then review the draft text for Q1 and Q3 in terms of the proposed answers and preliminary recommendations. And then for the meeting next Wednesday on 29th, it's likely the subteam will discuss Q4, and that also includes the proposed answer and preliminary recommendations. And then the third meeting on June 5th would be focusing on Q2 and Q5. And also when Julie sent the email to the discussion threads just before the meeting, these are mentioned as well. And then the last meeting before ICANN 65 on 12th of June, that will be the time for the subteam to review the updated text. So just to remind the subteam that staff will update the summary table and the status check document after the subteam have finished discussing all these draft texts in the meeting from today till 5th of June. And then the draft, the updated text will also incorporate comments and input sent to the discussion threads. And as Julie mentioned in the email, basically, we have 3 more threads that are open, and that's Q2, Q4, and Q5. All of these will stay open till 29th of June, and that's for you to chime in and provide comments. And staff just want to add one note and suggestion. So we do appreciate the red line comments from Rebecca and Kathy on Q2 and Q4. And but now our understanding is that it's a little bit difficult to incorporate these red lines when we update the document. So we certainly welcome you to continue providing your input and comment, but provide it in a format as a plain text and reference which question you're referring to. And then you can, for example, just write your suggested proposed answer for which question would be what. And in that way, we will be able to easily update the documents after seeing your input and also hearing other sub-team members' comments on that. The risk of having red line is it's possible that it may create a version confusion and other people may start doing red line on top of red line, and that will make the process a little bit messy and may run the risk that staff miss some of the important comments you provided. So our suggestion is when you provide further comment, please just write it in the plain text in the body of the email and then reference which question you're referring to. In that way, we can quickly check our document and provide update in that way. That's all from me. And Julie, do you have any additional comment?
Sure, Ariel. And the other thing I'll mention is just what staff mentioned on behalf of the co-chairs into the threads now before this call, and that is that we certainly do welcome any sub-team member to alert us to gaps with respect to what we have gathered from the transcripts, and even more helpful is if anyone does note gaps or mischaracterizations, if you can point us to the appropriate place in the transcript, that's even more helpful. And just also to be clear, as we mentioned in the email, at the close of a thread, and so the conclusion of discussion of the thread and at the sub-team meetings, that is when staff will do all of the updates, because that will give us an opportunity to look at all of the comments, making updates incrementally as we, once the discussion is concluded, then as the co-chairs note, then all of the updates will be incorporated. And I see you have your hand up, Kathy. Please go ahead.
Always fun with unmute. Okay, yeah. As one of the people who has submitted comments, I'm completely confused by the comments, particularly that Ariel just said. I've done this, I can't tell you how many dozens or hundreds or thousands of times now. And I don't understand what you guys have just said. In the case, I don't understand what you want. And given, and so the questions are, given that there are edits now out on questions 2 and 4 as requested, are you asking for changes of format? And given that a lot of this reflects stuff that has been just talked about a lot, do we really have to go back to the transcripts? Is that what you're saying? So confused about format and substance. I think I unmuted before.
Thank you, Kathy. And sorry if staff wasn't clear. So no, we are not asking you to go back and revise anything that you have already submitted. And thank you very much again for your submission. And that will be taken as with all the comments and edits that might be provided in the discussion thread. So the point staff were trying to make was just as others may respond to the thread, say for instance, if somebody was responding to the comments and edits that you and Rebecca have provided, then we simply ask that when they do so, rather than providing edits or markups to either of the documents, we suggest that they just input their edits or comments in the text of the message on the thread. And that way we don't have to worry about version control with multiple red lines on a document or changing versions of documents. Instead, we can gather up all the comments, yours, Rebecca's, and any others received on the threads,
once the discussion closes, and then we can take them all into consideration at the end of the close of discussion. And with respect to transcripts, no, we are definitely not asking that, and the email did not ask anything of you or Rebecca. It was just pointing out that if someone does note a gap or mischaracterization, again, as the discussion threads are continued to be open, then we ask that it would be helpful, if possible, if any sub-team member who might note that could point out where there are gaps in what staff has gathered from the transcripts. So nothing about what you or Rebecca have provided should change at all, and it will all be taken into consideration equally with any other comments received.
So I have a follow-up, Julie. Okay,
yes.
So the follow-up is that if we don't use red lines, it's really hard to talk about some of this stuff. In part because part of the objection is that stuff made it into the recommendations of the sub-team, even if it was only a suggestion of one sub-team member. And so it's hard to talk about strikeouts and things like that. And this is why I did attract changes, is it's hard to talk about some of this and keep track of it in text-based email, you know, one of our oldest technologies on the internet. Our email-based technologies. And so I think the red lines actually give us the ability to engage in a discussion that will be maybe more difficult via text-based email. Thanks.
Thank you, Kathy. And Greg, please.
Thanks. This is Greg Shatton. Can you hear me?
Absolutely.
Well, now somebody's phone is ringing. In any case, as part of this, as somebody who, you know, looked at Rebecca and Kathy's suggested changes and wants to understand where they came from, and to see whether I, you know, agree that they are, you know, improve the characterization of the work of the group, I would need or really appreciate knowing where this came from in the transcripts. Otherwise, I have no basis other than my own recollection for where this is coming from. And since we have, you know, a record of everything, either being an email or in a transcript, it would help and get us away from any kind of he said, she said discussion about whether what's being put in is a correction or a change that does not reflect the discussion. If something was a suggestion of one member and was put in as if it was a something that got wide support, then, you know, it would be good to know where that came from. The rest of us just then are kind of doing this with mittens and blinders if we're trying to understand the changes. So I, for one, would find it really helpful to know kind of what the genesis was of the changes. I assume when making the requested changes, whether they're in red line or plain text, I don't care. When making the changes, you know, you were making reference back to the transcripts or particular emails. So in order to understand what was being done here, since we're all at this point and stakeholders with a point of view, it's good to see whether the changes reflect the work of the group or the point of view of the person making the request, which will be equally true of anybody from any point of view making that request. And as staff indicated, if anybody else wants to make any comments, they're asked to point to the point in transcript where it appears that what we've had, what's down from the staff has deviated from what actually happened. So thanks.
Just one moment. It looks like Julie's audio is not connected any longer. So give me just a moment.
And this is Ariel. I just learned that Julie is trying to get back into the room. So we see Rebecca also had your hand raised. Rebecca, please go ahead.
Rebecca Toshnet. So here's the thing. The question is on whom is the burden to identify what they've previously said. And frankly, it depends a lot on the quality of the summary we got. And I'm just going to take the sub-question in question four that we discussed last week, just because it's easy to remember. And frankly, I thought that there was a not complete, but rough consensus on the lowest common denominator answer that I formulated. And staff decided to go instead with a blanket statement that did not reflect the thinking of the group and in fact conflicted with the other answer where we said we were going to seek feedback on whether there would be exceptions, and that was fully discussed at the call. So, you know, if especially if one set of commenters gets ignored in the summary, it is a misuse of procedure to say that it's the burden on them to go back and say, hey, you skipped this, you skipped this, you skipped this, and not everybody has RAs to hire to do this stuff. Thank you.
And thank you and apologies for being dropped from the call. Thank you for your comments, Rebecca. Certainly staff did work very hard to try to capture accurately the transcript, and that's why we did ask if we did inadvertently miss something that people could let us know, and you have done that very clearly, and we will definitely take your comments into consideration along with all the others that we may receive on the threads. And I see that Kathy's handed up. Is that a new hand?
It is new hand. Okay, so in following up, and again, going back to the need for a red line may help us all keep track of things that are hard to see in text email. So I'd like to ask you to revisit that declaration that everything should go into text. I think we're going to wind up losing a lot of the nuances. And also to Greg's statement, yes, I would love to know in the transcript how one person's comments became a whole sub-team's recommendations. But what we have, I mean, you know, how much research, so it's a question to staff, how, but it's clear on the face of the discussion. And again, I'm not blaming anybody. We're looking at a draft and we're coming to it and trying to say, hey, we think it seems to not reflect what some people said many times, but it also seems to overemphasize individuals. So take another look, Greg, if you would, and maybe you can help me in the transcript find where kind of certain individuals' statements became recommendations of the working group, even though it's only identified. I don't know who some of these people are, but individuals kind of rose to the level of recommendations, even though it was an individual mentioning something or suggesting something. So I invite you to join me in trying to go back to the transcript to find out who these people are, because in some cases, I have no idea. But to staff, can we figure out another way, a smoother way, or maybe to Martin and Roger as well, a smoother way to talk about the edits? Otherwise, I fear our process should be building on each other, and we try to be very constructive and help in this. But I'm not sure of the next steps. And again, I just don't think email necessarily does it for us. How can we incorporate some of this now? Thanks.
Thank you, Kathy. And just to be clear, the suggestion for not marking up the documents in red line is due to the fact that can cause confusion between versions, since documents cannot be updated until after the transcripts are out, and that takes several days. But I see Greg and Christine's hands are up, but I just wanted to briefly turn to Ariel, who has perhaps an explanation that might be helpful. Oh, and I should also emphasize again, these suggestions for using text in the thread, the discussion thread versus redline, are not staff suggestions. These are co-chair suggestions. So I think your request, Kathy, is more properly addressed and directed to the co-chairs and not to staff. Ariel, please, and then I will turn to Greg and Christine.
Thanks, Julie. This is Ariel Leon for the record. So just to respond to Kathy's question, why certain people's, one or two people's comments become a recommendation, that's not the accurate statement for that. As you can see, that a lot of these are suggestions that we captured as such. We said it's initial concepts or ideas or proposals that the subteam just discussed, but the subteam hasn't developed preliminary recommendation on that. And we also highlighted them in orange, and we have noted what the orange means. They're tentative text. They're not set in stone. So that's not true what Kathy said. There are already recommendations. They're not. They're just initial ideas, proposals, or suggestions that proposed by people. And we want to make sure the record is capturing them so that the subteam can look at them and see whether they can potentially developing into a recommendation. That's the purpose of that. I just want to clarify that. Thanks.
Thank you, Ariel. And Greg, please.
Thanks. Greg Chapman for the record. I don't want to beat a horse living or dead, but I don't think this is an abuse of procedure or a request to do research. It's just a request that if you think something was incorrectly captured, to indicate where it was correctly, you know, what this resource is that you're relying on and saying that where the accurate kind of thing is from which it should be captured or recaptured. Kathy, I'm glad to hear that by your invitation to join you and looking in the transcript, you're indicating you're going to be looking at the transcript again as well to point out where what the basis of your suggestions were. I think this is kind of a mountain out of a molehill. It should be clear enough. If the staff didn't capture accurately what was being said, then we need to look what was being said and then make sure it gets captured accurately. That does not sound like a bizarre proposition. Thank you.
Thank you, Greg. And I see no other hands up, so let me go ahead and turn to the next item on the agenda, concluding the review of individual proposal number 6 and discussing the ICANN compliance response. To Martin, please.
Thank you very much, Julie. Can you hear me?
Loud and clear.
Perfect. Okay, we already started reviewing the proposal number 6. Is there any other comment besides the ones you made last week? Just as a quick reminder, it was about implementing, if we could take enough notice to implement some open source software in order to allow more registrars to use the trademark notice. We asked for an ICANN opinion. Maybe staff can introduce us to what ICANN has responded, and then we can open the floor for some comments on it. Maybe Ariel or Julie wants to talk about ICANN's response to this.
Thanks, Martin. This is Julie here. Julie Headland from staff. Given that we are already at 26 minutes after the hour, we do have the text of the response from the ICANN compliance up in front of you, and we also sent around via email, and you'll see the link in the chat. So, Martin, perhaps we can just ask if anybody has any questions and otherwise move on.
I don't see any hands up. Martin's here. So it would seem that we can move forward. Just check the checklist.
Warren?
Hi.
It's Claudia. Hey, it's Claudia.
Yes. Claudia, please, yes, go ahead.
Thank you. I apologize. I have not been on the calls recently, and so I'm not exactly clear with the genesis of reaching out to compliance. I'm sort of assuming it was to inform our understanding of what's been happening operationally. So in terms of, we're looking at the policy, that it's very helpful to have this. I was just looking this over, I was just left with the feeling of why the compliance team is not proactively doing this stuff. I'm not sure if that might be outside our remit. Maybe that's something that could be discussed separately with compliance, or not. Maybe it is related to our work, but it just seems to me when there is a policy, and this has come up before in the WHOIS context, where ICANN is doing proactive work in terms of making sure WHOIS is in compliance. Of course, now with GDPR, that's totally changed somewhat. But that was my thought. It would be helpful for compliance to be taking on a more active role in the RPMs.
Martin, this is Julie Hedlund. May I provide a little context?
Please.
So just briefly, Claudio, this isn't really about whether or not compliance is being proactive in the RPMs, but it arose from a proposal in individual proposal number 6, that if the TM claims notices are retained, ICANN shall provide open source software in the top 5 programming languages used by registrars to assist in integration of the TM claims notices with registrar systems. So the reason staff had the action item to check with GDD and operations focused colleagues is just to see what ICANN is already doing. So for example, is ICANN already providing open source software or what else might ICANN be providing? And what assistance did ICANN provide in implementing the claims notice and so on? So all of these questions are around validating claims notices and so on. So just answering some questions that arise from that proposal, but not to a I think what might be a different question is just whether or not a more broad question that as to whether or not compliance is being proactive with respect to RPMs. So I don't know if that's helpful for context, but it's at any rate. Sorry.
That is very helpful. And I just quickly looked this over and I just saw that the first question was asking if they were proactively checking to see if the claims notices were sent out. Because I just know that a lot of our work is we're drawing assumptions about the claim service and what's happening once those notices are sent out. And it just seems to me correlated on a certain level. From that perspective, because, we've heard, for example, that some registrars have waited until the claims period was over. And we don't really know. It could be, for example, the claims notice could be generated. Doesn't have to necessarily be a domain registrant that is triggering the claims notice. And so I was just looking at it from the perspective that if they are not proactively looking at it, that could be relevant to our work. But everything you said was very helpful, and I don't mean to drone on about it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Claudio. Appreciate it. And back to you, Martin. I think
Thank you very much, Julie. And thank you all for your inputs, Ariel, for doing a quick overview of the agenda, and everyone for making the input. Be sure that there's no bad faith here. Mistakes are made, and please do speak out and help us to sort out how can we better translate our opinions and debates into the final text. And towards that, I would like to remind everyone that now we are focusing on this new document, the status check document, instead of the summary table. And of course, we're gonna go back and forth because things from the status check came from the summary table, but let's try to keep the focus there. We have now in the agenda the review of the proposed answers and recommendations of question 1 and 3. I don't think we're going to get to 4 because of time. But we can start with question 1. And I'll open the floor in case anyone wants to start commenting on question 1's either the proposed answer or the preliminary recommendation that is crafted. I see that Rebecca Tushnet has her hand up. Rebecca, please go.
Rebecca Tushnet, thank you. So I don't believe this reflects our discussions at all. Absolutely was never a standard that we applied. The debate has been over likely, probably, and possibly. And that's what the summary should reflect. And it may be true, we can't come to a consensus over whether it's probable or likely. That seems to me to be accurate, but I don't think anybody ever demanded absolutely. And in fact, the standard has never appeared in previous versions. So in fact, this to me illustrates the problem. Like if I were to go back to the transcript, I could not find, I don't think, anybody proposing absolutely as one of the standards. So I think it should be removed, and we can put back in probably or likely. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Rebecca. Of course, everything is noted. Anyone else wants to come to you? If you're on the bridge, just move forward. I have Christine Durain now, and a queue has been formed. Christine, you're next.
Thanks. This is Christine Durain. So then in the interest of moving it along so that staff can very clearly capture what we'd like the answer to be, because I jumped into this call and I think we were having some issues with the way staff has characterized the recommendations. Rebecca, are you suggesting that staff say, with limited data, the sub-team has determined that the service is, and I believe the word you used was probably or likely having its intended effect? Period. End of proposed answer. Thank you.
Rebecca has just answered in the chat. No. And I have Kathy Crane next on the queue. Kathy, go ahead.
Sorry, it's I just got an interruption, so I will skip. Thank you.
Rebecca, would you like to answer Ring?
Sorry. Did my question not answer Christine's? I'm sorry. I'm not sure what I'm being asked.
This is Christine. I'm just trying to help staff. And clearly I misunderstood, so I'm glad I asked. So you would say then, if staff is taking notes, with limited data, the sub-team did not come to agreement as to whether the trademark claim service is probably or likely having its intended effect, although the sub-team could determine that the service is at least possibly having its intended effect. Is that your proposal, your proposed language?
Go ahead, Rebecca.
Sorry, Rebecca. As I said in chat, that would work for me.
Thank you very much, Rebecca and Dwayne.
Can I ask a follow-up?
Sure, please, go ahead.
Okay, thanks. This is Christine. So then, Rebecca, my follow-up question is, just in the interest of simplicity in drafting, do you believe that the two clauses are potentially redundant to say we did not agree X, but we did agree Y? Is it easier just to say we agree Y without saying what we don't agree with? Or do you, I'm just trying to be super clear because I would like to have the fewest number of words in our recommendations if possible.
Rebecca, go ahead.
Rebecca Toshnet. Thank you, Christine. I actually could be fine with just the second half. I think it's a little weird, but in the interest of compromise, I would be fine with the second half. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Rebecca, and ready for that exchange. Greg, shut down your neck, please.
Thanks. Greg Shatton for the record. And I guess I'm struggling and maybe won't be able to do it, you know, during the time of this call to see whether I agree with Rebecca as to the characterization or any, and for that matter, whether I agree with staff that, you know, the subteam agreed that the service is only possibly having its intended effect. And whether, you know, in fact, there was, you know, more of a split, with some people saying it was probably or likely or just plain old having its intended effect, and others maybe saying possibly or not. I don't, in a sense, I don't know that this is one where there, when you, where you could kind of average out the answers. You know, it's like putting jockeys and basketball players in a room and saying the average height in the room is 6 feet. When nobody in that room is 6 feet. So I guess I need to go back to the transcript and see whether it's, you know, as possibly as, you know, even on the scale that was suggested that we are working from, you know, pretty low down on the thermometer. And, you know, whether, you know, there is agreement in this subteam that that's where we stand versus the intended effect is a conclusion which I question substantially. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Greg. I see Christine's kid commenting on the chat. Kathy Kleiman has her hand up. I assume that Rebecca is old hand. Same with Greg. Kathy, go ahead.
Okay, unmuting. This is Kathy. First, is that an old hand for Rebecca, or does she want to respond?
No, it's an old hand. She's to go.
Okay, so a question for you, Martin, and for staff about master documents. We now have two documents, the status check and the claim summary table. So I have just a comment, a question to ask, and then a quick comment. The question is, are these documents synced? Is the claim status check for trademark claims, is if what we show in terms of proposed answer and draft recommendation the same as what we find in the claim summary table? So are they synced? If not, what's the master document? And then just a comment that that the revision that Christine and Rebecca have been talking about makes sense to me. Thank you. And seems consistent with the original summary table that we had for this question.
And Martin, this is Julie Headland from staff. I put in the chat, yes, Kathy, the documents are synced. And so any changes made to this status check doc will be reflected in the proposed answers and preliminary recommendations in the summary table.
Thank you very much, Julie and Kathy. Do remember that a lot of these things that we're talking about, they're going to be materializing in actual text, maybe not today or tomorrow, but in the next week as we move along. So don't panic if you don't see immediately a change in the summary tables or in the status check. But they're being worked in the background. Do we have anyone else on queue or on phones?
Martin. It's Claudio again.
Claudio, go ahead.
Yeah. My thought was simply it's actually related to the last comment I was making, which is if we don't know to what extent the policy is being complied with, then it seems very difficult to be able to ascertain to what extent the claim services is having its intended effect. And you know, maybe there's things out there that provide some context. I know there were surveys done and that went out, but that's the part I'm struggling with. If we just don't know to what extent registrars are complying, it just seems that that's just a direct corollary to whether they're having their intended effect or not. I could come up with some draft language maybe and send you around to add that component into this answer, unless anyone has any concerns with it.
Thank you very much, Claudio. I have Christine with her hand up. Christine, go ahead.
Hi, thanks. This is Christine Dorain. So yeah, I do have a problem with that, Claudio, because as Julie pointed out, compliance is a completely separate function, and we're talking about the effect of deterring cyber squatting. And I don't, even if you put in language that said, you know, compliance should do a better job, even if we pretended that was in our scope, there's really no way for compliance to really check it. I mean, various people sort of, and we know that various people recreated the TMCH because during claims periods, they basically pinged the registrars looking for registration data to see when they got claims notices back. So we know that people were doing that. But there, you know, the claims period runs for 90 days. The registrars that offer domain names during claims, as the staff doc pointed out, that was on the screen a moment ago, where a registrar is offering a claims period, they could only do that if they're on the list, which means they're plugged in. Their EPP codes are all like connected. So theoretically, the only way they would not do it because they're plugged into the TMCH would be if something was broken, right? In which case, even the registrar might not realize that something was broken, which I could see, well, that might be a compliance issue to let them know something was broken, but it's hard to know that there's an absence of something. So that's why staff, to my understanding, I don't know why staff put that in the comment, but it would be my understanding that the reason staff responded the way they did is because they can't actually ask people, tell us about the thing you don't know might be broken, right? And so basically they have to rely on third parties to say, gosh, my mark is in the clearinghouse and there's a sunrise or a claims period and someone should have gotten a claims notice, and I attempted to register my own mark, and I didn't get a claims notice. That would kind of be the only way to check it. And so I don't think it makes any sense to go out of scope for something that we can't really ascertain anyway, and where it's more or less irrelevant to the purposes of our discussion. So maybe that helps the explanation. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Christine. Claudia, since you can't your hand up, if you want to do a follow-up, just speak now. If not, Greg Chapman.
Thanks.
Greg, go ahead.
Well, I'll keep it brief. I tend to agree with Christine on this. I think the mention of compliance in the ICANN response has gotten us a little bit off our track. While, of course, we're looking for data, and it would be nice if compliance somehow, you know, assembled data, that they're, you know, on the level of compliance with this, it's not happening, and you know, our focus is not at this point, certainly on, you know, talking about what compliance should do. If in fact there was data that there was very low compliance, then I think we could answer that it wasn't having its intended effect because of lack of adoption. But I don't think we have any sense, any data, or any, first or second hand experiences that compliance is so far off. I mean, we do have knowledge, I think, of specific instances. Could certainly say in those instances it did not have its intended effect because it wasn't there. But I think we're not looking for the long answer here. I think we're looking for the short, holistic answer. And this is an interesting conversation, and at some point in the life of the working group, maybe not this team, we should talk about how to have better data for the next time. And I'm not sure it's compliances. While it's good to have compliance data, I'm not sure they're necessarily the right resource to have better data. But it would be nice to have had this data wherever it came from, and maybe we should try in the future to, have better data. But at this point. I think the issue is not what compliance or should or could be doing. The issue is kind of writ large, how well is this working, based on, overall adoption and overall effect. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Greg. I do want to remind you that this is one of the, according to the agenda, we don't have 10 more calls to talk about question one. So. If you have anything in your mind, this is the time to speak up, because we only will have only one other call working on this question if we move forward. So if no one else wants to step up, remember you can always use the email list. We're going to move towards question three. I see that Ariel is moving towards that in the Zoom. Thank you very much, Ariel. Let's start working on this. We only have less than 10 minutes. Let's start at least with something. Does anyone have any comments towards the proposed answer here or the preliminary recommendation? I have Rebecca Tashnet on the queue. Rebecca, go ahead.
So I think the answer has to be we couldn't reach consensus on this either. At least on the 3A. What we did reach consensus on with respect to 3 is that the notice needs improvement, and we should probably focus on that. I don't think that the discussion that we had supports the proposed answer, given that every time it's come up, people have pointed out that the underlying question, is it deterring cyber squatting or even deterring, accidental infringement, is unanswered. We can't reach consensus on this too, which is just a restatement of is it doing its job. So. I would delete the proposed answer and put in a reference to question one, reflecting our existing disagreements, and then move to the things that we can fix, the quality of the notice, the written notice itself. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Rebecca. I have Christine Devine next on the queue. Christine?
Thanks. This is Christine Durain. So I'm going to push back a little bit, Rebecca. I get what you're saying, but I actually think staff did a pretty good job with this answer because it is really factual. It doesn't get to some of those emotional issues that we've been talking about here. We've saved those for the preliminary recommendation. So I think if we look at the proposed answer, it's very, very specific. The trademark claims notice generally meets its intended purpose of, so the purpose, we're saying the purpose is to notify prospective domain name registrants. So we don't say the purpose is to prevent cyber squatting. We say the purpose is to notify prospective domain name registrants that the applied for domain name matches at least one trademark in the trademark clearinghouse. That is the proposed purpose for the claims notice. We don't get into the substance of are we preventing too many? Are we preventing cyber squatting? It's just, do we give people a notice? And so I think the proposed answer is really neutral and it's fine. And I think that we can handle some of the other issues in the preliminary recommendation section. But I think that in this case, the proposed answer is pretty neutral, but I welcome your thoughts on that.
Thank you very much, Christine. George Shatton just commented on the chat. I would suggest the following wording for question one answer. Some members of the subteam believe that the test is probably having an effect, while others believe it's just possibly having an effect. I have Kathy Hyman next. Kathy, go ahead.
Always fun with unmute. Okay, so Greg's comment is about Q1. Okay, but we're on Q3A. So a question to Christine and to others. In light of, I mean, it seems to me we could just delete, you know, Q3A is really an umbrella question. It seems to me we could just delete the proposed answer and say see below, and that would solve our problem. If we don't want to do that, then it seems to me that we need some kind of balancing here. Christine, even though it may be somewhat factually correct, it seems to leave a misimpression. So, and let me, so the trademark claim, I'll read it fast because we all have it in front of us. Trademark claims notice generally meets its intended purpose of notifying prospective domain name registrants that the applied for domain name matches at least one trademark in the trademark clearinghouse, but there are clear problems as set out below. And that way no one stops at this answer, because you can't stop at this answer. This is the question about the trademark claims notice. And of all of our questions, this is the one we most agreed on and found the most answers to. So so to Christine, to others, you know, if we're gonna, should we delete this or keep it with a but? Thanks. Oh, great, thanks. I'll put it in the chat then. I'm reading in the chat, thanks.
Thank you very much, Kathy. Rebecca Tashnet is next. Rebecca?
Rebecca Tashnet, thank you. So I actually like to delete it a lot better. And here's the best evidence we have. The best evidence we have is from the survey of ordinary registrants who weren't previously members of INTA. And in that group of people, that the surveyors found for us, when you ask them what the purpose of the notice was, if you look at the data, they basically picked, we gave them two answers that correspond to what we have here, that this notice is to inform me that there's a match, right? And we gave them two answers that were completely wrong. And they did not pick with any like predictability. Their answers were essentially random. We got basically, it appears that you could answer more than one. So we got basically 30% clicked each of the right answers and each of the wrong answers. They to say that it's generally meeting its intended purpose is not borne out by the best data we have. That's why I think deletion makes total sense, especially since we get better, more coherent answers below. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Shulika. I have Zach Moskowitz on the chat to follow up with Katie's suggestion, proposed language for why the trademark claims notice does on its face inform registrants of matching trademarks. There are significant shortcomings with the nature of the notice as set out below. We do have like 60 more seconds, so I will ask Greg to be very brief. Thank you very much, Greg. Go ahead.
Thanks. This is Greg Chatton. I would not support deleting the answer to question 3A. I do not believe it is merely an umbrella question, especially since the next one begins with if not. So clearly it's a chain of questions. And the best data we have on this doesn't appear to be very good. And for reasons we don't have time to discuss. So I, you know, would certainly not, you know, make that govern our answer. I think what would make sense, just so, you know, people who can't read more than one sentence or two sentences that aren't in a row, and maybe we could put in a sentence or a clause at the end of this that says that the subgroup or the subteam, you know, notes the following inadequacies or concerns. Below, something to that effect. That's not the exact language I would suggest, but I think, you know, the fact is that it does do what it's supposed to do, but it has, you know, some unintended intimidation effects, and those need to be dealt with. And I think we agree on that. So, you know, maybe that's a kind of a middle path on this. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Greg, and we don't have more time, unfortunately, but we can follow this next week. So, Scott, if you want to go up, go ahead.
Yes, thank you, Martin. And as we are at we are 4 minutes to the top of the hour, so past stopping time. Thank you very much for Martin for chairing, and thank you all for joining. We will now conclude this call to allow people to transition to the next call that will start at 5 minutes after the top of the hour. Thank you.
Thank you. This concludes today's conference. Please remember to disconnect all lines and have a wonderful rest of your day.